In my line of work, I have spent a lot of time engaging with local communities, especially Indigenous groups. Being able to live alongside these families and see how they go about life, how they treat one another, and their connection to nature has probably had the most profound impact on me. It gives me perspective on how we can get back to a place of taking care of one another and taking care of wilderness and nature. My guest on the podcast today is Jennifer Palmer, a wildlife biologist, women's empowerment advocate, and mindful traveler. And I cannot tell you how excited I am to have Jen on the show. Not only is she a passionate wildlife and nature lover, Jen is also the founder of an initiative called Women for Wildlife, an international movement to support, empower, and unite women and girls around the world devoted to wildlife and conservation. She has spearheaded several Girls in Science programs and is an active advocate and spokeswoman for women and girls in science. Being a wildlife biologist and working out in the field, Jen is currently 100% nomadic. And when I asked her how she balances all the things in her life, she said that balance for her is in managing all the different priorities that change upon any given day. Some days, she says she's in the driver's seat and everything is in control. And other days, nothing seems to be as it appears. On such days, getting out in nature always gets her centered and grounded. Of course, being a wildlife biologist, you know I had to ask her what her favorite animal was. Can you guess what she said? She said, "For me, elephants always hold an extra special place in my heart. We have so much to learn from them. Their social structures, the way they care for and interact with each other and with nature. Just watching them fills my heart with hope for humanity, if we do things right." Having seen elephants in the wild, let me tell you, I can completely attest to what Jen says. They certainly are extra special. Jen is an amazing woman, conservationist, change maker, and all-round nature lover. And I know you are going to enjoy getting to know Jen on this episode of Culturally Ours. And be sure to check out Women for Wildlife for ways you can get involved with wildlife conservation, if that is something you are passionate about.
Welcome to Culturally Ours, a show where we explore global cultural diversity in an intimate way through conversations and narratives around lifestyle, culture, food, art, and travel. Host Karthika Gupta talks to people from all over the world who have intimately experienced different cultures as a way to understand each other's worlds from the inside out, focusing on what we have in common.
Welcome, Jen. Thank you so much for joining me on Culturally Ours. I am very, very excited to have you on the podcast, and I cannot wait to chat with you and get to know you a little bit better.
Oh, thank you so much. Me too. I feel the same.
Absolutely. So before we begin, could you tell us a little bit about who you are, where you're from, just to kind of help set the stage for this conversation?
Sure. Well, I grew up in South Florida, and so I grew up with a really close connection to the ocean and to nature. And so that sort of set the path and trajectory for my whole life, so to speak. And I ended up becoming a wildlife biologist and traveling the world, working with lots of different endangered species, working together with different cultures and communities, and really trying to bridge the gap between conservation and travel and our connection to nature and the healing powers that nature has. And I've done that in a lot of different ways, and I'm sure we'll chat more about that later.
Well, a wildlife biologist sounds really, really exciting.
It is. Yeah.
I have kids, and you know, as a family, we are pretty into nature and wildlife. And when I was telling my daughter that I was going to be talking to a biologist, wildlife biologist, she was so excited. She was like, "Oh my God, I have all these questions for her."
Oh, that's great.
So tell me now how your career and your kind of the path that you've chosen. What are you doing these days in terms of nature and conservation?
Yeah, you know, my career, and I think this is one of the things I often tell a lot of students and probably young women like your daughter, you know, that careers go in so many different directions. And I think that that's an important thing for young women, especially to understand. And mine in general started out in wildlife biology, so more of a scientific track, you know, working with universities, collecting data, being able to present at conferences, you know, the whole sort of science path. But along that journey, you know, I really came to understand that if we truly wanted to save wilderness and we wanted to save wildlife, we absolutely needed to be working with people, and we needed to understand how to protect these places in a way that also helps support communities. And so, you know, going from being a scientist to now traveling and doing a lot of presentations and working with the tourism industry and launching an initiative that is very close to my heart called Women for Wildlife, which is about building a community and supporting a network of women who are passionate and driven all around the world towards wildlife conservation. And that's just been an important part of my career in the way that it's aligned with all of these parts and pieces.
Sure. And you know, that you bring up a very good point where at the end of the day, the way change is going to happen is if people are involved. You cannot have things in a silo. You cannot right. have, yes, data and, you know, all of that is important, but the action mm-hmm. steps and the, you know, the things that people do to make a difference, that is what ultimately makes a difference. So I love the idea of Women for Wildlife. Could you expand a little bit more on sort of what your vision for this sort of organization is? And it's been around for a couple of years. So tell me the kind of work that you
sure.
do.
Sure. You know, the idea originally came to me, I actually was attending a conference and I was meeting all of these extraordinary women. And I realized that none of them knew about one another. You know, they were all based in different countries, whether it was, you know, somewhere in the Amazon or somewhere in Australia or somewhere in Africa. All of these extraordinary women were leading these efforts that I was incredibly impressed by. And they all had similar stories and that they felt they were on their own. You know, that they were dealing with cultural barriers. They were struggling for, you know, the resources that they needed. It was just a similar story. And I just had this calling, like, oh, wouldn't it be amazing if we started connecting these women and we shared our stories and we built a foundation of support for one another and we shined a light on our work and we celebrated our successes and we didn't reinvent the wheel every time. We actually reached out for mentorship and we helped connect to, you know, younger generations to so that they could see the different areas that they could go into if they cared about wildlife. And so, you know, Women for Wildlife, when it started, was really, and still is, it's really about community. And it's about building a movement that is about supporting and lifting up one another. And the ways that is happening and will continue to happen evolve almost every day based on the people that come into our community. You know, I'll get phone calls and emails from women that say, you know, I really want to get involved. How can I be part of this? And I always say, well, you already are part of it. You care about these issues and you're passionate about a community, and there's lots of different ways. And so then those conversations start about what is your voice? What is your community like? What do you think would make sense for you? And so because of that, because of the different disciplines, the different voices, the different regions around the world, it's evolving in a really, really amazing and inspiring way. So I've been really excited to see how it has changed and shifted and will continue to do so based on the community and the needs.
Right. Right. It sounds absolutely fascinating, Jen. Now, can you share some, you know, experiences or people that you've met along this journey of yours as a biologist, as a nature lover, and now through, you know, Women for Wildlife, that have perhaps made a really big impact mm-hmm. on your mm-hmm. life, your lifestyle, or, you know, more importantly, maybe your mindset?
Yeah, I think for me, it really has been some of the strongest moments I've had that I feel have forever shifted me as a human, and not even just as a wildlife biologist, but just as a person, is connecting to local communities, especially Indigenous peoples. So being able to live alongside these families and seeing how they go about life, how they treat one another, how they take care of each other, the connection to nature, their ideals, their philosophies, their approaches, that has probably had the most profound impact on me. It has been a guiding light for me along the way, and helps give me perspective of why are we doing the things that we're doing, and how do we get back to a place of taking care of one another and taking care of wilderness and of nature. And it really has steered the course of my career. And so I would say that has been probably the most profound opportunity that I have had. And I've been able to do it in multiple countries. And every time I walk away and I feel like I have changed and I have grown and I have a clearer understanding of what really matters in life.
I love it. I absolutely love it. And you're so right. I mean, when you're in the field, when you're ingrained in these communities, you actually see it for yourself. You experience it. You have those conversations, and that really sort of tie everything together, right? I mean, it's a different thing when you're, you know, seeing it on a computer or watching a video or something. But when you actually talk to people, it just, I don't know, I feel like it connects the dots. And conversation is so important. That hands-on is so important.
And I think that, you know, the word that comes to mind really is just the simplicity of connection. I think we grew up with an idea that other places and other people are so different than we are. And then when you live there, you realize we're all pretty similar at the core foundation. And I love that when I go to places and let's say I don't speak the language, and you show up and you smile at someone and they smile at you and you use sort of your hands to communicate and you watch them play with their children and you share a meal with them and you just realize we're really not that different. And I really love that. That has made a big difference in my world.
Absolutely. Now, you've said you've traveled all over the world. You've, you know, kind of stayed in communities. You've met people. Is being on the road so much hard? I mean, we always see the glamorous bit, right? I mean, oh my God, look at her. She's in the jungle, or oh my God, she's in Africa, or whatever. Tell us a little bit about maybe
it's
the
tricky,
harder parts.
You know, I think that people, you're right. People often see it and like, wow, I would love to have your life. And I think that the glamorous parts, of course, there's some amazing things I've gotten to see and experience, and I feel incredibly grateful for that. But the other side of it and the reality of it is that it is very challenging. It can be very tiring. You know, you're catching planes and trains and you're trying to navigate a new place and where do you get your food and where am I going to stay and how do you get from point A to point B, and just the logistics of day-to-day life require a lot more energy. You know, you're kind of always navigating and problem solving. There's not a routine. There's not I know exactly what I'm going to do today or eat today. And there's part of that that's amazing, but there is part that it can be draining. And then the other side of it, of course, is, you know, you're not surrounded by your community or your loved ones. You know, you're on your own a lot. So you have to build that community of support and make those connections with new people, wherever you go. And again, there's that's a beautiful part of it, but it's also challenging. You know, it can get a bit exhausting when you make a plan and the plan doesn't line up, which is 99% of the time. Learning to be flexible, learning to be patient, learning to be humble, all of that does require quite a lot of energy. And I think that people don't see that other side of it. They don't see the part where you're stuck somewhere and you're homesick, or you're in a loud place and really just want to be in nature, or you're in nature and you see something that's truly heartbreaking and you feel like there's nothing you can do, or you meet a community and you go into a school and you see the conditions that they're living in and it just breaks your heart. You know, so there's again, there's those extremes when you have a life like this, and when you're on the go, you're a lot more vulnerable than you would if you were living sort of a typical day-to-day life. And that part is challenging for sure.
That's so true. Now, what would you say are some of your sort of mottos or maybe mantras in life? Maybe another way to put it is kind of what motivates you and drives you. Would you say it's kind of these sort of things that you've already talked about, or is there anything else?
Yeah, I mean, I think I picked up a card many, many years ago, and I love quotes. Anybody that knows me knows I love quotes. I love mottos. I love mantras. They personally, they help me, they help ground me. And I picked one up a long time ago, and it said, little by little, step by step, it happens. And I remind myself of that quite a lot, because I do have big dreams and I do have big aspirations, and we all get impatient with the amount of time it may take and figuring something out or building something new. But it doesn't mean it's not happening. It just might not be happening as fast as you want it to. And I think that that's been something that has helped me keep going and keep, keeping it real, so to speak. Like, these steps along the way, those are the important parts, and they don't always come in big leaps and strides, and that's okay. And I think in general, what really motivates me or keeps me going is that deep love and connection to nature and to one another. You know, compassion and empathy are qualities that I hold very close to my heart. And no matter where I am in the world, I think about those qualities often. Whether it's I'm frustrated in the moment, or whether it's there's something I don't understand about what's going on, I take a deep breath and I understand that, you know, we're all navigating this world in our own ways, and through compassion and empathy and kindness, that's what keeps me going, really.
For sure, for sure. Those are very important qualities. Yeah. Hey there. I hope you are enjoying this episode of Culturally Ours. Did you know there are so many wonderful resources, articles, and blog posts on the website to extend your Culturally Ours experience? We also have a library of free resources, like a travel guide to some of the most culturally diverse places around the world, a global kitchen essentials cheat sheet, and so much more. Head on over to culturallyours.com/free to grab these, and be sure to check back often as we're constantly adding more resources just for you. Now, let's get back to the episode. Now, you had mentioned that you travel a lot. You're 100% nomadic. I'm just curious, how do you balance all these things in your life, being on the go, you know, your family, your career, your business, and perhaps, you know, your own aspirations?
Sure. Yeah, I think one thing I've learned along the way is that there will be a shifting of priorities on any given day, right? So there may be times where your work needs to take that front driver's seat. And then there's times where that needs to pause and your family really needs you, or where you feel that you're getting a little lost along the way and you need to take some time and some self-care and go into nature and get grounded and centered. So I think that it's not that those can't coexist at the same time, because of course they do, but I think that the balance of it changes all the time. And I think one of the things that helps me is just to accept that and to know that there's going to be times where life is in flow and it's easeful, and there's going to be times where it feels complicated and complex, and that if I set intentions every day for what's going on that particular day, it helps kind of keep me in check and says, okay, what's important to my heart versus what society is saying or what my fears are telling me. And I have those deeper conversations. You know, I meditate, I do yoga, I journal, and that's what helps me understand the balance of family, friends, career, personal aspirations, personal growth, things like that.
Yeah, keeping everything in perspective.
Yeah, and understanding it's going to change. It's going to change often, yeah. And that's okay. And it's something that might be really, really, really important to you one day, the next day might not be important anymore because something else has taken the priority. So I think that's good to know.
Of course, of course. Yeah, life changes in an instant,
does.
A second. Right? So now, Jen, if you're open to sharing with us, because I really feel people connect better when they hear sort of personal narratives. So whatever you're comfortable sharing, that's not a problem. What have been some of your life's most beautiful seasons or experiences? And on the flip side, what have been some of the harder sort of experiences? And what have those sort of taught you?
Yeah, the beautiful seasons for me have always been when I'm in the wilderness, when I'm truly immersed in nature. It's so awe-inspiring, and it just lights me up. I'm just a big glow of energy when I'm around wildlife, when I'm in the wilderness, when I'm in deep nature, and I truly feel connected. That's probably the most beautiful seasons I can think of when I reflect back have always been. I'm on an island. I'm in the jungle. I'm in the bush. I'm experiencing something that's very natural, and I feel that connection to the people around me, and I'm living in the moment. You know, so for me, you know, living remotely and really understanding how it all works, it makes things more simple for me in some ways, where it's like, oh yeah, you know, sort of circle of life, so to speak. You know, you watch the animals and you learn from the animals. You're in a village, you learn from the people in the village, and there's an easefulness for me that I feel makes such a beautiful season. And then in terms of the hardest, it's for me, it's the in between times. I call them the impasse, you know, the spaces of the unknown. That's really the breeding ground, if you will, for all those fears and the self-doubt and the vulnerability and the loneliness comes when you're not sure what's next. You know, you're not quite sure where all this is going, or when are you going to get, you know, your next contract, or when is, you know, the next round of funding going to come from, and how are you going to make that trip happen, or how are you going to, you know, get to this country you really want to go to, or how are you going to pay your bills this month? It's the in-between that's, for me, is when I look back in my life, that's always the times that I struggle the most, but yet it always works out. An opportunity always comes around. You know, you have a network of people to support you. You are loved, you are safe. And it always leads to something amazing, even if you have to go through uncomfortable times or struggles in the meantime. So I'm trying to learn to be kinder to myself during those hard seasons, fully understanding that, you know, it's like flowing water. You know, you can watch a river, and sometimes it gets stuck in a swirl, and sometimes it's going fast, and sometimes it's slow, and all of that's okay, but it is hard. That part's really hard for me. Not knowing, but like, when's it going to happen? Yeah. Whatever it is, whatever it's supposed to be, I want to know. The unknown is brutal.
I agree. Now, what advice would you give other conservationists, nature advocates, or maybe even people who are just very passionate about the environment and wildlife? How can they make an impact? And that can look, you know, different for different people, right? But how can they make an impact effectively and I think more importantly, honestly, for themselves?
I always say, you know, start where you are. Literally take a look at the room that you are in. Take a look at your home, take a look at your workplace, your school, your community, you know, sort of start where you are at and then work from there. And think about, you know, what kind of voice do you want to have? What platform do you have? What do you have access to that could be people or resources or skill sets? And sort of take stock of what is causing concern for you and what you feel is your best method of addressing that. And it is different for everybody. And I think it's important that once you have a little bit of clarity on that, it's easier to create steps to build something that works for you. And I think you don't have to do it alone. That's a big part of why I launched Women for Wildlife, is that you have a network of people to lean on and to ask questions and to get mentorship or get ideas. Or there's so much going on that you can learn from and you can scale out already. And so I always say, you know, use your passions, start where you're at, and And I see it in so many beautiful ways. I mean, for example, I have a cousin who is a musician, a professionally trained French horn. She's incredible. And she also loves wildlife. And she started an initiative called Horns for Rhinos. And she's helping share the message of conservation to the music community. She's done incredible fundraisers and had concerts and has, you know, helped take musicians into the bush to show them these animals and how important this is that we save them. I mean, she started where she was at. You know, she wasn't a scientist. She wasn't she didn't know a lot about this in the beginning, but she's learned so much and she's doing such great things. And that's the kind of message I like to share with people, that it's wherever you are at, start where you are.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of times we want to make these big impacts, right? And so when we feel like, okay, my voice is too small, or what could I possibly do? It's when we don't do anything.
Yeah.
But every bit matters. I love what you said, you know, start from where you are, use the resources that you have, and then do research and figure out there's nothing new, right? There are people who are doing this, and all we need to do is just reach out and say, hey, I want to help.
Yeah.
Let me know how.
Yeah. So. There's a great verse in a song by a musical group called Rising Appalachia. And they talk about, you know, you may feel like your voice is small, but when we put them all together, it makes a mighty roar. And I love that concept. And we're seeing it more and more, especially, you know, with younger generations and with, you know, this incredible movement of what happens when we really come together on something that we're passionate about. And that's why I say you don't have to do it alone. There's people that can help you, and there's a community out there. But taking that first step is usually the hardest. And once you're on it, it's a lot easier from there.
I agree. Let's perhaps start to wrap this up a little bit, just in the interest of time. What has been your biggest aha moment or moments?
Yeah, you know, one thing that comes to mind, I was doing my master's research in Costa Rica. And when I was younger, you know, I used to have this idea that environmentalists are good and poachers are bad. And when I got to Costa Rica, part of my research was to meet poachers, to visit their communities, to see their homes, to meet their children. And I had this massive aha moment when I realized that there were so many limitations on what was possible for them to earn money and to take care of their family, that I had a strange feeling that if I had lived in that area, I would be kind of forced to be a poacher, because there wasn't anything else I could do to survive. And that was very powerful for me to understand the difference between being a conservationist, caring about the environment, fighting on behalf of wildlife, and also understanding that, you know, these people are just trying to make a living. And they don't have access to water and food and education and healthcare and these resources. And I see that all over the world. The aha moment happened in Costa Rica for me. But since then, I have been able to recognize that as a really fundamental part of the work that I do, and being able to share the complexity of conservation, you know, what I call conservation conundrums. You know, we have these issues that are very complex. It's not just a matter of right, wrong, you know, poach, don't poach, hunt, don't hunt. It involves a lot more depth than that. And so I would say that's just what that comes to mind in terms of profession. Sure. For sure. Again, a lot of compassion. Now, I have compassion for those people now that I didn't have before. So yeah.
Yeah. It goes back to what you had said earlier, right? I mean, understanding and empathy. Those are key no matter what. You have to be willing to listen to both sides, or multiple sides in some cases, before making a decision, or before even kind of saying, okay, I get it. But, you know, you get it only when you've seen all the complexities of it, right?
Yeah, and involving the communities in that conversation. I think a lot of times, you know, we, in terms of the conservation community, go into a place with ideas about how local communities should manage the resources without even having a conversation with them, you know. And they have brilliant ideas, and they know the land and the animals way better than we do. And when you listen and you create a dialogue and you share the fact that these are really precious resources, and this is why we want to help protect, you know, what we're trying to protect, and the connection to the long term for generations, for the land, whatever it might be, those are the conversations that you can together come up with some great solutions. But when it's one or the other, or there's not a dialogue or a bridge, it's really, really complicated to get to a solution.
Absolutely. Now, what advice or even sort of life lesson would you tell a younger Jen?
I think if I could sit myself down, you know, just imagine, actually, I can say I've done this sort of internal work, you know, a lot of the sort of spiritual path, if you want to call it, involves talking to your younger self and trying to understand. So I've actually had this conversation. But I think part of it is really, you know, you're stronger and more courageous than you will ever imagine. Hmm. And I tell that to younger people all the time, because I think it's an important lesson to remind yourself, because I think when you're younger, you don't necessarily feel that way. You might not feel as strong, or you might not feel as smart, or you might not feel as as accomplished, but you are. And I think that that's an important thing to be sharing with younger generations. You know, like you have this ability to connect with other people, and you can use it, and you're more powerful than you think, kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Now, what do you do for fun? I perhaps know the answer, but I'll ask it anyway. How do you unwind after a long day? How do you sort of unwind and relax?
I love to dance. I love to dance. Whenever I can dance, I do it by myself. I'll do it with other people. I'll do it on the beach. I'll do it in the airport. Like, I really... that's very therapeutic for me. I also enjoy yoga, and being outdoors was a given, you know, hiking, camping, paddling, swimming, anything that gets me outside really fills my cup back up and makes me feel very joyous. Dance is usually my go-to.
I had most of the others in my kind of docket. I didn't have the dance bit. All right, let's do a quick rapid fire round. Okay. So don't overthink it. Whatever comes to mind, okay?
Okay.
Coffee, tea, or something strong?
Coffee.
Favorite flavor of ice cream?
Anything with chocolate.
Okay. A quote that you get inspired by?
Oh, boy. So... there's a quote that I have had written on a piece of paper since I remember hearing it when I was actually young. And it's a quote by Ferdinand Magellan, the Spanish explorer. And this quote is that the sea is dangerous and it storms terrible, but these obstacles have never been sufficient reason to remain ashore. Unlike the mediocre, intrepid spirits seek victory over those things that seem impossible. It is with an iron will that they embark on the most daring of all endeavors, to meet the shadowy future without fear and conquer the unknown. That,
wow.
I keep that with me in my wallet, and I read it whenever I am in doubt of whatever might be happening, and it fills me back up and charges me. So,
oh yeah, for sure. That's amazing. That's amazing. Okay, horror movies, action, adventure, or drama?
I'm going to say none of the above. Comedy.
Oh, okay. Favorite season, spring, summer, fall, or winter?
Summer. I love the heat.
Okay. What was your childhood dream job?
A marine biologist.
I think you're one of the few people who actually eventually did.
I did it. I became a specialist in lots of animals. Yeah.
Beach or mountains?
Oh, if I absolutely have to pick, I'll say beach, because I'm pretty sure I'm a mermaid at heart.
Okay. What's your favorite food?
Avocados.
Oh, okay. All right. This might be a hard one, but as a wildlife conservationist, what's your favorite animal?
Oh my gosh. It's like saying, what's your favorite child? It's very difficult. The one that comes to mind, maybe it's just because I've been spending a lot of time in South Africa lately, but I would say, you know, elephants. I think we have so much to learn from them. their social structures, the way that they interact with nature, just watching them. There's so much to learn.
Okay. Three must-haves that you take with you on every trip.
Okay. A sarong. Hands down. Sarong is the best thing to travel with. It can be used for everything. A journal. And my metal water bottle. I have a little water bottle. I'm very anti-plastic, as you can imagine. So yep. I don't go anywhere without that thing.
Okay. What's your favorite country in the world?
It is impossible for me to pick one. I've been asked this question before and I have tried. I've agonized over an answer and I really don't know how to narrow it down to one because each country has so much to offer in terms of culture, in terms of architecture, landscape, wilderness, wildlife. So I don't actually have a
favorite. That's okay.
I would
that's
tell okay. you if that, I did.
That's a good answer because it's like you're right. Every country
they're all special for their offer. Own reasons. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So Jen, what lies ahead for you? Are you sort of fully living your dream or what comes next if it's okay to share with
us? I think I'm part-time living my dream. What I'm working on is to full-time live my dream. And I say that because the things that make me feel very fulfilled really have to do with creating opportunities and experiences in nature for people to understand the healing power of nature and the awe that nature has to bring our lives and the importance of protecting wildlife and protecting these wild spaces and doing it that in a way that also supports local communities and conservation initiatives. So really threading together my passion for nature and wildlife with that piece of, adventure and experience. And so I've been able to find a way to do that for part of the time, but not all of the time yet. But that's the area that I'm really going into in terms of building Women for Wildlife, building communities, and finding creative ways to support all of these projects that are led by women, and doing it in a way that, that I'm able to facilitate that experience for somebody else to say, hey, these are magical places, and I know how healing they are. Come with me, and let me show you. That is my dream, and so I've been able to do it part-time, but not full-time yet.
Jen, I'm sure it's going to happen very soon.
Thank you.
I love your enthusiasm. I love the passion that you have for the outdoors, for wilderness, like you say. It comes across loud and clear, Jen, in everything that you say. So I have no doubt you will be living your dream
full-time
very, very soon.
I'm proud that it's even part-time, I feel lucky for that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there are not a lot of people who can do what you are doing.
Yeah.
I mean, we all, we all want to do something.
Sure.
We all have that deep desire that, hey, we want to make a difference. Hey, we want to protect. But not a lot of us have the funds or the ability or whatever it is, right? So when we hear stories like you, it's very inspiring and it's empowering. It's empowering for me. And I know when people listen to this, it'll be empowering, especially that they can do it in whatever way feels right for them.
Exactly. And that's always the message that I try to share with people is find your voice, find your passion, find what lights you up and what you feel really inspired by and dive in, go explore and have an adventure and be open to the healing powers of nature and to connect to, these wild places and these incredible cultures, because I think it is very invigorating and inspiring and it can change your life. I really feel like these are transformative experiences to have. And so, in any way that I can do to inspire more people to go out there on their own or do it, or do it with me, or do it together in another group. I've just seen people's lives change in really miraculous ways. And to be able to do that while we're helping wildlife is just, it's amazing. So I hope to continue.
Absolutely.
So thank you for the opportunity to share my story.
Absolutely, Jen. Thank you so much for coming on Culturally Ours. And I really appreciate you taking the time.
Of course. Thanks.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Culturally Ours. Check out the show notes at culturallyours.com. If you've enjoyed this show, please be sure to hit subscribe, leave us a review, and share it with your family and friends.